I want you to meet Leighton. I think this is how you read this name, right? Leighton Putt. I think this is a real person, not AI-generated persona. But so this guy has a blog. You don't have to write his name or anything. I'm just using the example. And this is what you can see in his blog. After a very quick Google search, I found this guy. And this is what Leighton says, and this is what we're going to be using throughout the whole session, okay? He says, religion is a powerful tool at governing the lives of unintelligent peoples and keeping them in control through scare tactics and the dissemination of mythologies. All right, so, wow, big words there, right? Leighton is smart. He knows his big words. So it is a very direct attack claim against Christianity, okay? And it's a very specific. So this is the type of thing that Andrew sort of opened the door for us in the morning, yeah? We hear things like this every day, or we read, or we encounter in some shape or form. Now, what do we do with this? Oh, yeah, very good. He stole my thunder, but yeah, that's fine. Now you know. So what are we going to ask questions? What we're going to do, what we're going to do today is we're going to see how to approach situations like this. Now, this situation is dangerous for us as Christian apologists on several ways. First of all, it is very threatening for us personally. And it is actually offending for us personally, because obviously we are, if we talk to a person like this, they say something like this, we fall into the category of the unintelligent peoples that are being manipulated. Okay, so this is offensive for us personally. On the second level, this is offensive, I would say, for Christianity. So it attacks a core value of ours. So not only personally, but also in terms of, so now we want to defend, right? Now this is the perfect situation to start defending. And you could see, I love this graffiti. I've had it as a screenshot many times. And what Leighton is saying, you're dumbed down, you're brainwashed, you're misled, and that's why you're divided. Yeah, I love this. It's such a powerful, there's such a powerful pathos to it, yeah? It's very beautiful. Yeah, this is what religion does to people. And the topic of my talk is questions, the ultimate apologetics too, and what I do for a living. I used to have a business consultancy for 8 years, and I teach communications and rhetorics. I did one master's in theology, and I'm graduating my second master's in continental philosophy with focus on phenomenology. I'm doing some phenomenological research of organization, culture, stuff like that. So communication, rhetorics, culture, anthropology, I sort of swim in these waters without being an expert in any of them, which is sad, but it is what it is, yeah? I'm more practically oriented. I'm always practically oriented. I'm not an academic, but I would use this to spark conversations, and conversations create cultures. And this is very interesting, but that's not the topic of our talk. But we'll focus on questions as the ultimate apologetics tool. And by this, we'll go deeper into what Andrew was sharing this morning. And before doing that, I want to tell you a little bit about Relentless. So you see there is a red bull on the logo, which already symbolizes something. And this is the logo we designed last year. And there is one thing that we're missing. It's the grill part. We should introduce grill into the equation, like steaks. And this would make the experience so much more wonderful. But this is what happened last year for the first time. For the first time, we sort of involved the advanced apologists in a very heavy set. Like it was, Dave was here, like, and you guys saw it was not easy, yeah? It was not easy. So it was a very, the grill part is something else. It's not the steaks and stuff. It's a difficult session. But what I was part host, part observer, you know, trying to play both roles. And what we discovered last year from the case, from what happened, was something very interesting. We discovered there was no real conversation. The Christian apologists that wanted to defend faith, they were not engaged in a real conversation with the two hosts. There was no listening on the part of the Christian apologists. Not whatsoever. They had their arguments prepared, and they were ready to preach the arguments to the audience. So from time to time, it sort of looked like a pub brawl, you know, offensive, defensive. We would attack, they would defend, attack. So it was ugly, you know, at times. And in the end, if you are a communication scientist, if you observe human communication and group communication, you know that this is the best way to achieve ineffective communication. Right? So these are all signs of missing the goal, communicationally speaking. So my talk today is aimed at helping you not miss the goal this year. Okay? So you can think of it as a stepping stone for your preparation for the final day, for the Relentless podcast. Now, we live in what Edgar Schein, and this is one of the most famous organizational psychologists, sadly, he passed away last year. We live today in what he calls the culture of tell. And I'll quote him twice during the presentation. But he says, "It has always bothered me how even ordinary conversations tend to be defined by what we tell rather than by what we ask." And this is very, very powerful in all human contexts. Okay, so we're starting from broader perspective. And he says, questions are taken up. This is probably my favorite sentence from the whole presentation. Questions are taken for granted rather than given a starring role in the human drama. And this is what we're going to be talking about. The questions, they belong, or they deserve the starring role in the human drama. Yet all my teaching and consulting experience has taught me that what builds a relationship, what solves problems, what moves things forward is asking the right questions. And I think that we as apologists, we are to move things forward. We are to solve problems, problems people have with faith, with Christianity. So, and please, Andrew, open this, and I just want to continue. And honestly, we have not discussed the content of our presentations. And I was just listening to him, and I said, this is so beautiful, the fact that our two talks combine in such a powerful way. Jesus asked 307 questions. You can see the source down there. But what's really interesting is that he directly answered only three of the 183 questions that he was asked. So he asked over 300 questions to people around him, and he answered only three out of the 183 that he was asked. And you say, why? Well, but Jesus didn't live in the culture of tell. And it is very, very important for us to understand that. He inhabited a completely different human reality in terms of communication reality. Yeah? So this is very important for us to understand. I know that this might be, shaking some of your foundations, because Christianity is all about preaching. Apologetics is all about having the right argument. And I agree that it is true. It is important to have the right argument. But apologetics in Christianity is not all about speaking. So what I'm aiming at, or my challenge for you today, is what I call a shift of our primary apologetic reflex. Our primary apologetic reflex is going to speaking, telling mode. And I advocate for a shift, switching from making speeches to asking questions as a primary reflex, as part of our DNA. Of who we are as apologists. Because questions, they have three superpowers. And now we start into the working mode. I promised we're gonna work a lot today, yeah? First, the first superpower of question is inviting. So questions are great conversation starters. You can build connection, and they help you to understand. So again, Edgar Schein, he designed something that he calls humble inquiry. And he calls it, this is the fine art of drawing someone out. Drawing someone out. Taking the personality, the real self of the person, and drawing it out of the shell or the confined space they're in. It is a fine art of asking questions to which you do not already know the answer. It is a fine art of building relationship based on curiosity and interest in the other person. So this is the opposite, he says, of the culture of tell. I'm here to tell you something. No, no. I'm here to draw you out with curiosity and genuine interest in who you are. And this changes the whole set, the whole conversation setting. Changes everything, honestly. So this is the first thing that I want to show you. And to have a practice. Now you see this man in a cafe. You don't know the person. And we had this conversation during break. I don't know the people. How should I? Now please, do a humble inquiry here. Genuine curiosity. Draw the person out. Your turn. Use a question. What are you reading? Very good. Another question. Very good. Is that a cappuccino? I don't know, but I'm curious to find out. Very good. What else? Give me. What is the name of your what? Ah, barber. Okay. Sorry, man. The word baba in Bulgarians means grandmother. So I was like, I heard baba. I was like, this is very interesting asking someone you don't know about his grandmother. Might work. I don't know. In German culture, you go and, what is the name of your grandmother? Huh? It's, okay, perfect. The barber. Yes, yeah, perfect. Great. Yeah. Do you like, okay, the book? Can I ask you why you put on this? Very good. You saw the bracelet. Very good. Yeah. Does this mean something? What is the meaning of this? And now the anthropologist here, or the whatever, the researcher tells you, if you ask people you don't know, what is the meaning of something they're wearing? It's a direct entrance. Because they're wearing it because it has meaning. Tattoos, whatever. It's just humble questions with interest and curiosity. Okay, what about this lady? She's on the bus. And you are about to do a humble inquiry. What how are you doing that? Where are you going to? Okay, very good. What else? Glasses. Cool glasses. Where did you get those? Very good. What else? Nice style. This is a bit, yeah, but she's a baba, so it's okay. It's safe, yeah. Oh, very, this is a bit, depending on culture. Now, and this is what Andrew said, depending on culture. Oh, the German question, is your husband still alive? I have a very good. Now, but you can see, we are laughing. We are laughing because we can see that some questions work, some questions don't work based on our cultural, you know, what Charles Taylor calls the social imaginary, the world, okay? But anyway, and last attempt. Nice beard, of course. Okay, what else?
Where did you get your hat?
Where did you get a hat? It's a fantastic hat, very good, yeah. Okay, what else? Yeah, very good. What else? Yeah, okay, very good. Is this Merlot or is it Cabernet? Who's your dentist? Very good. What I'm trying to show you here is that every human being, let's put it this way, behind the facade of an unknown person, there is a someone that you can draw out in a conversation and go into what Martin Buber calls the world of relationship between you and I. And the questions have the superpower of doing that. It's just we are so self-focused and obsessed that we forget that we have this superpower of drawing people out. And sometimes we're so afraid what would they think of us. So we just don't use it, and we have it. Try it around the lunch break. Just try it around, and you'll see. Genuine interest about something, and immediately something happens. Yeah? So this is first step. This is how you start apologetic conversations. Genuine interest towards the other people. Humble inquiry. Now, so what where are we getting at with this? Well, I'm getting at the fact that you should not answer Leighton when Leighton attacks you. You should ask him. Okay? What's wrong with you? Who's your dentist? Now, but obviously, we're not there anymore. So we're not at the contact-making situation. Now, how does humble inquiry look like in a context like this? And this is where an American philosopher and I think a very famous author, Gregory Kukul, comes in. When you hear something like this in a conversation, it's actually a very simple question. What do you mean, Leighton? What do you mean? I genuinely don't understand what you mean. So instead of going into fight mode, I start my defense, because this is a defense. It is a powerful defense strategy. I started with a simple, humble query. What do you mean by saying that? And this transforms everything. It transforms the human communication situation because you show the person that you're not there for a fight, even if they are. And you show the person that you're willing to listen respectfully, and you want to take the time to understand where they stand, even though it sounds quite offensive. Yeah? And I think this is the first power of Christians. It is very, very difficult for non-Christian people to reach that point of controlling ego and abstaining from fighting back and so on and so forth. So this is the first step. The second superpowers of question is that we can use them to explore the thought and to challenge assumptions and to sort of deconstruct. Somebody said deconstructing the thought of people in the question time. I was there, so I didn't see. The key name here is Richard Paul. Me and Andrew, we've been talking a lot about being humbled by the fact that there are so many non-Christian people who are deeper. And they should be, let's put it this way, we should be saying the things that they're saying. So Edgar Schein is not a Christian. Richard Paul is anti-Christian. He's one of the most famous professors in critical thinking. And he says it's not possible to be a good thinker and a poor questioner. Thinking is driven not by answers, but by essential questions. We should strive for a state of mind in which essential questions become second nature. So I'm hoping for a transformational effect this morning. And he sort of splits the thought, or any thought, in eight, like a cake, eight pieces of the cake, eight elements of thought. For pizza, hallelujah. Purpose, question, information, interpretation, concepts, assumptions, implications, point of view. And what I'm going to show you now is how we're going to use each of those to go on the offense with Leighton. Okay? And this is what I do. This is how I do apologetics. I know this, how people think. I know the structures. First, we start with point of view. So how this is going to work, I explain just in 10 seconds how it works, and then I'll show you examples of questions, how you can use these questions. You remember Leighton's sentence, right? Or the statement. He said religion is a mind-controlling tool that keeps people in fear, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so now first, all thought takes place within a point of view. So Leighton is speaking within some kind of belief system. Assume that you do not fully understand the thought until you understand the point of view or frame of reference that places it on the intellectual map. So you cannot understand, this is sort of the worldview mapping tool. Now, how this works? Dear Leighton, from what point of view are you looking at this? This is such a powerful question. He stops him in his tracks. What do you mean? Oh, but there is so much behind your thought. I want to know more about it. Is there another point of view, dear Leighton, we should consider? Which of these viewpoints makes the most sense given the situation? Okay, so this is very powerful. You can enter into this in the discussion from any of the eight elements. You don't have to go number one, number two. You can enter through any door. This is beautiful. Yeah? So first, I can ask these questions. Second, the second structure or element, piece of the structure or element, all thought reflects an agenda or purpose. So Leighton is saying what he's saying for a reason. I don't know the reason. So I assume that I do not fully understand the thought of that person, including my own, okay, until I understand the agenda behind it. So, dear Leighton, what are we trying to accomplish here? What makes you say that? What is our central aim or task in this line of thought? What is the purpose of this conversation? Why are we talking? Smiling, genuine, humble. But I don't understand. Then every thought is responsive to a question. And now we as apologists, I think this is probably the most critical element, because this is why Jesus never answered questions directly, or almost never. Because he knew that underneath the question, there is the real question. The real purpose, the real question. So we should assume we do not fully understand the thought until we understand the question that gives rise to that thought. Such as, dear Leighton, I'm not sure exactly what question you're raising. Could you explain it? Is this question the best one to focus on at this point, or is there a more pressing question we need to address? Should we put the question this way or that way? And this is very powerful. This is what drives conversations forward. It's not arguments. It is this type of conversational sort of intelligence, if you want. All thoughts presuppose an information base. So I assume I do not fully understand you until I know the background information that supports your thoughts. On what information are you basing that comment? This is my favorite to do with people who quote the Bible to me. The Bible says, where? Show me. And I've had several people who are paralyzed by that question in my conversations, because I'm like, I've got the Bible on my phone. Can you please show me? Well, I read an article many years ago that said that someone who read it, I'm like, so you've never read it. And that's the end of it. Okay. Now they know that they should be more careful. What experience convinced you of this? I love the second question. Could your experience be distorted? How do we know this information is accurate? How could we verify it? Which the professor did. Have we missed something? Have we failed to consider some information or data? And what is the data based on? How was the data developed? You can spend here all day. But this basically says, how do you know, Leighton, that religion is mind-controlling? And then you just sit there and smile and drink your tea. And you let them boil. Because they don't know how they know. Most of the everyday critics of Christianity are the level of that university student. Okay? They're passionate about their convictions, but their convictions are not particularly deeply rooted intellectually. So asking 3 or 4 questions is a very easy way to just help them see, deconstruct their thought. But I'm not saying anything yet. Yeah? Now, this is a bit more challenging, but there are inferences that shape the thoughts. So, dear Leighton, how did you reach that conclusion? Could you explain your reasoning? So, what we see, Leighton says religion, whatever, is a mind-controlling tool. How did you reach to that conclusion? What is the chain of thought that led you there? Is there an alternative, plausible conclusion to that chain of thought? So I'm thinking thoughts like 1, 2, 3, 4, and number 5 is the conclusion, religion is mind-controlling too. Okay, I can have 1, 2, 3, 4, but can number 5 be something else? Can it be some people use religion as mind-controlling too? Some religions might be used as mind-controlling tools. I don't know. Can it be something else? This is a very powerful question. And given all the facts, what is the best possible conclusion? You saw that question in the video. Now that you know, now that we've talked through, now that we've been, do you still hold your first position? He said, no, I feel like an idiot. We move on. 8, it's the only goal of, this is why there's so much text here. I'm not going to retread. The only goal of this presentation is that you can take it home and practice those. This is why there's so much text. Obviously, we're not gonna learn all of them, but I just want to show you how many questions you can ask before you open your mouth to say a single word in terms of preaching and saying. You can play around all day, and usually by the fourth, the fifth, my experience, fourth, fifth, sixth question, the people are ready to listen. The contradiction of their own beliefs. And here, Andrew, of course, knew Francis Schaeffer, and I only read some of his books, but I really love his idea that we should approach a conversation like this from the firm standpoint that if it is not Christ that's the foundation of someone's thought, this worldview and their chain of thought are going to break somewhere. They are going to fall, to fail. They are going to shipwreck in the rocks of reality of God. So asking these questions actually makes the ship shipwreck sooner. Dear Layton, what is the main idea you're using in your reasoning? Are we using the appropriate concept? Do we need more facts? Do we need to rethink how we are labeling the facts? What Dave saw, what Dave, you know, the attention to words, this is attention to concepts and definitions. Is our question a legal, a theological, an ethical one? If we're speaking about knowing things, this is epistemology. Are we using epistemology? Are we talking about epistemology correctly? If we are talking about the nature of reality, this is ontology. Oh, you know about ontology. Let's talk ontology a little bit, okay? So this is what I mean, and this is where now you see why we need to be well-read. Now you see. Because in order for us to diagnose these things, we need to understand what epistemology and ontology and whatever is. Otherwise, we just follow Layton. Assumptions, I really love this. Dear Layton, what exactly are you taking for granted here? Why are you assuming that? Layton, for instance, if you listen to his phrase or statement, he says, religion is. He's taking for granted that all religions are the same. Right? All religions are the same. Is that true, Layton? Why are you assuming this? How come? And game over. Shouldn't we rather assume what assumption underlie, so on and so forth. And I think this is the last one, implications. Implications and consequences, just a slight difference. Implications is the logical continuation. So I showed you the train of thought until our statement, but we were trying to discover the inferences, and now we're trying to discover the implications. If we move forward with your thought, Layton, does that mean that 70% of the world's populations are actually stupid and blind? This is the logical continuation of your thought. Yeah? Oh, that's very interesting, Layton. What makes you think that you're not among the blind? What helped you see? And Layton starts crying. I'm just, this is to wake you up. Yeah, I know this is a bit technical, but last year we saw during our podcast experiment, and we even discussed it with Bruce last year, Andrew, you remember, we need to be a little bit more able to do critical thinking. We need to be a little bit more prepared into analyzing thoughts and asking the right questions. So this is why I'm doing this session, you know, and I know, I hope it's useful for you, but implications, dear Layton, if we do what you're saying, what is likely to happen? This is the consequence. So implication is the logical continuation, and consequence is what happens if we act upon what you're saying. Should we ban religions, Layton? Should we kill all the religious people? What is the solution that you propose? How do we solve this? How do you save the world, Layton? Oh, sorry, are you the Messiah? Because the statement is put from such point of view as if he knows the truth. What makes you say that? What makes you think you know the truth? Very humbly, not in an attack, but why would you say such a thing? Who gave you the truth? And this is quite the offense. It can be also quite offensive, but as Andrew said, we should be careful. The third superpower of questions is inspiration. Dear Leighton, how does this alternative sound to you? To what extent does it make sense? How did your point of view change? What stops you from considering X as a viable option? I've deconstructed, analyzed, and then in the end, I can use questions to invite. Well, doesn't Christianity seem like a viable option for you now? At least to consider. I had a conversation with a young lady, 2 years ago, and this is where I'll close. But I did some of the questions that you saw before, just listening to her and just asking this and that very critically, but yet very friendly. And in the end, I was like, so, because one of the things that we reached is that it's very difficult for us to understand our identity, which was an identity conversation. And I absolutely agree with Andrew. Talking about identity is very powerful with today's people. And we reached there, and I was like, so, and she said, well, I really, what you're saying is that identity, I cannot understand my identity without Christianity. And I say, yeah, does this change your initial perspective? And she said, I'm mind blown. I've never ever thought. And I probably said two sentences in the whole conversation. I just asked questions. You know, she reached that conclusion herself. I did not say it. She reached that conclusion herself just by me asking questions. Then she was ready for me to elaborate on the historical traditions of Christianity, on the deep, she's a writer, so she more like aesthetic and all of that. She was ready to listen, but not before that.